Chapter 3. A Journey into Hell. From the previous chapter, it will have become clear how all the regions of matter and spirit are being violently agitated by the ever-spreading atmospheric revolution. We would now like to consider the hereafter, which is to be viewed as the reflection sphere of the material field of life. Every pupil of the spiritual school knows that both these spheres of our earthly nature order are inseparably bound together, and, therefore, highly interdependent. It is also known that things are already fully active in the reflection sphere before being manifested in matter. This is an advantage, but it also creates great dangers. The advantage lies in the fact that those who have knowledge of a certain development in the hereafter are thereby warned about its corresponding material manifestation. The danger lies in the general human ignorance of such foreshadowing. In general, one can say that there is an alarming lack of knowledge regarding the hereafter, and that this causes countless people to be victimized. To fathom the values, forces, and phenomena existing on yonder side, humanity possesses, or thinks it possesses, religion, based on theology, occult knowledge, based on the intellect, and animism, based on spiritualism. The theologian, as metaphysical savant, speaks and writes about matters of which he knows, and can know, nothing. Should he possess greater knowledge, it will not be by reason of his university education. The theological field is full of worn-out platitudes, borrowed from dogmas and misconstrued doctrines of salvation, this being the reason why the church mystics remain uninformed regarding the dangers that beset them. The person in search of occult truth amasses a vast amount of encyclopedic knowledge in accordance with his interests. In reality, this makes him totally deficient in true wisdom and therefore unreceptive to the higher life. By means of spiritualism, a great part of humanity, unfortunately the greater part, enters into an extremely negative contact with the regions of the reflection sphere. The word negative here refers to the fact that in appraising and evaluating the phenomena, one is dependent upon a third party who is not what he pretends to be. However, it is necessary to give a wider meaning to the idea of spiritualism. For us, the term includes not only asking questions of spirits or communicating with spirit entities by means of instruments or mediums, but also the tremendous grip which the inhabitants of the invisible regions have on practically all of humanity living on this side of the veil. This grip is so strong and so subtle that almost no one can evade it. Upon closer examination, humanity proves to be so animistic in practice, intellectually as well as mystically, that concepts such as Christianity and a liberating higher life are hardly more than illusions. As soon as the pupil begins to investigate all these things, he will be seized with horror upon discovering how rankly the cancer of the evil horde has spread. The pupil perceives and experiences the reality of Paul's words in Ephesians 6, verse 12. "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." The atmosphere in which humanity has to live is like an evil-smelling morass through which it has to drag itself. Many helpers, both in the regions of matter and of spirit, remark about the horrible stench of a lower etheric nature which emanates from whole groups of people, making it almost unbearable to approach them. When one of the biblical authors speaks about dunghills in which human beings wallow like swine, and about the idols they worship, he is alluding to an absolute truth grasped through higher knowledge. Since there is a certain amount of humor in everything, we find it even in this wretched situation. For example, one sees people trying to appear very mystical and pretending to be very exalted, while one would literally hesitate to touch them because of the atmosphere of wickedness which has taken hold of them. Countless people are partially or totally animated by the forces of wickedness, and the greatest danger to any human being is the assumption that he is immune to this influence. All the highly intelligent and conscious forces of evil constantly connect themselves with and adapt themselves to each individual, after having made a thorough study of his state of being beforehand. These forces approach man in the guise of very exalted entities, as masters, as apparitions of Jesus, and other very holy spirits. If one does not happen to possess a religious, occult, or spiritualistic turn of mind, then they suggest self-authority, a historical materialistic or other nature scientific hobby. But they ensnare him somehow, be it only in his primary instincts, such as self-maintenance, jealousy, and worldliness. Everyone is stirred up against everyone else, situations are ruined, insight is obstructed, and relationships become muddled. Each is forced to distrust the other and to seek for the fault outside himself. In short, satanic atmospheric activity is being released over humanity, an activity which, in the history of the world, has always been the prelude to tremendous world upheavals. We would like to trace some of the causes and a possible explanation for this activity. It is well known that before things are revealed in dense matter, they are already manifested in the more rarefied substances of our planet, a total spiritual, cosmic, and cultural revolution, which affects all the relationships of consciousness, soul, and matter, is literally descending from above. The author of the Book of Revelations was not being merely poetic when he said, "And I saw the holy city of God coming down from heaven." He is alluding to a process of world revolution which intervenes from time to time in earthly affairs, revealing itself at a given moment in the material sphere, having descended through the more rarefied planetary spheres. Just as a storm wind drives before it everything that cannot withstand its violence, and just as the darkness must flee before the light, so the light-giving force of coming events is driving the entire inferno before it. All the inhabitants of Hyle have risen from their lairs and, in the grip of a terrible panic and a natural instinct for self-preservation, they are trying to escape with their lives. One might wonder whether there will be anything left for these earthbound entities to salvage when the light appears. One might say naively, "Of course not." However, on closer consideration, one realizes that those infernal powers can indeed salvage a great deal, which explains the heavy assault of wickedness upon humanity living on this side of the veil. That is the reason why mankind is not fighting solely against flesh and blood, but also against principalities and powers, against the rulers of the present darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. A great wave of abnormality is sweeping over mankind, leaving nothing and no one untouched. In particular, those who endeavor to let the light of Christ enter, and who are positioned in the ranks of the White Brotherhood, are not left in peace for a second, and are exposed to the most violent attacks. It is necessary to give an explanation of all these dramatic phenomena. Evil is the antipole of what mankind calls good. Many human beings, judged by society's standards, are considered to be good, very good, humane, excellent, and loving. This goodness would be very good indeed if only it had no antipole. There are people, and the writers of this book are among them, who absolutely deny the goodness of good because of its black shadow, because of the dialectical nature of things. The good of this world maintains evil, as evil does goodness. Consequently, if humanity does not change, does not break through to a totally different spiritual attitude, far above all commonplace ideas of goodness, and does not achieve a structural and fundamental rebirth in a vacuum of development created by Christ and maintained by his brotherhood in a new sphere of existence separated from this world, then this hell world will continue to exist as long as man continues to exploit his biological and primitive goodness. If man does not totally revolutionize himself spiritually, then he will remain, like all the others, bound to this earth, despite all his solemn declarations of goodness, love, and friendship. For man has his shadow, and he maintains that shadow just as he maintains himself. There is none good, no, not one. These words were once spoken by Christ, and they are among the most profound and true ever spoken. Do not think that the unfolding of divine events can be held back. Everything has its own given time, and the coming years will be of historic significance for the whole world. Therefore, each one of us ought to ask himself, when these things manifest themselves, in what state will they find me? Shall I still be experimenting with this everyday goodness, or shall I be engaged in breaking through to a new spiritual disposition? Everyone should bear in mind that the enemy lies in wait for all human beings, because every individual who remains firmly bound to the dialectical world is life insurance for the powers of darkness. Just as the body of an animal is a source of life for innumerable parasites, so man also is no exception to this rule. Every genuine spiritual work is hindered in all possible ways, and a war of breathtaking suspense is being waged against it, a war compared to which the struggle against flesh and blood is as nothing. Our age, the age of revolution, demands that man begin to see and to accept reality. Never has there been a more fitting time to quote the words of John the Baptist, "Make straight the paths of the Lord. The hour has come."